Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody with our star comedians, Fred Allen, Kenny Baker and Portland Hopper, the Texaco Roundtable, the Martins and Al Goodman's Orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, well, here it is Wednesday again. And here it is 9 o'clock again. And here is that man again. What's his name again? Oh, yes, Fred Allen in person again.
Thank you. There's one thing Major Bowes can't do up there. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, again. And Jimmy again. Stop giving me those dragged-out introductions again. Now, don't you know that we're living in an age of speed? Time is of the essence in our business here. Why, this is radio.
Gee, I'm sorry, Fred. I didn't know you were in such a hurry.
Well, now you know, Jimmy. This program is a split-second proposition. Everything is done with clock-like precision. You see that mess of tense, haggard faces behind the control room glass there?
Why, yes.
Well, those men are all concerned exclusively with the function of time, those men. Each one of those highly trained craftsmen is holding a calibrated stopwatch, synchronized with a naval observatory at Greenwich. I couldn't locate it for a minute, but it's... They're holding these calibrated stopwatches synchronized with a naval observatory at Greenwich, correct to 1/10,000th of a second.
Well, isn't one of those men holding a gun?
Oh, that's the sponsor's booth, Jimmy. I mean the control room over here.
Oh.
There are 12 men in there, all named Bulliver.
Okay, Fred. Let's get on with the newsreel.
Well, that's what I say. Let's get on with the newsreel. Time in radio is precious, Jimmy. Tempus fugit. Time and tide wait for no man. A stitch in time saves...
All right, then. Let's get to the newsreels. You're only wasting time.
When you say I'm wasting time, you're wasting time saying I'm wasting time. You don't seem to understand, Jimmy. This is radio. Every note of music, mind you. Every word I speak. Every door slam. Everything is timed. Even the two laughs we get. Timed right down to the bone and then retimed. Clocks ticking, calculations, engineers, science, mathematics, astronomy, research, all adding up to one brilliant, precise result.
What?
Every week we get off the air late.
Look, Fred, if you don't shut up, we'll be late again tonight.
Well, that's what I've been trying to tell you. If you have learned my lesson, Jimmy, we'll turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlights from the world of news. Elizabeth, New Jersey, Union County Grand Jury rules that the game of bingo, whether played for charity's sake or not, is gambling. County prosecutor orders police to crack down on all bingo games, and instant raids scatter 500 women playing bingo in a local club. Tonight, Texaco News invites the local committee to discuss the Jersey question of the hour, bingo. Is the committee ready?
Quiet, please.
Now you'll all be heard. Everybody's going to have a chance. That man walking away with you, was he? Well, first I'll take this gentleman in the cutaway coat and sneakers here. Your name, sir?
Trumbull White.
Trumbull White. And what is it you do over in Jersey, Mr. White?
I am a reformer.
A reformer, I see. Now, what about bingo, Mr. White?
Bingo, or Jersey chess, as it is called, is the second largest industry in New Jersey.
What is the largest industry?
Running buses to bingo games. Yes, there are thousands of migratory bingo players.
Wandering all around through Jersey, huh?
Yes.
Well, for the benefit of an odd listener or two, a shut-in, who may not know what bingo is, will you explain it?
Bingo is a game.
Yes.
200 people sit around at tables with numbered cards.
Yes.
A man on a platform calls out numbers. 31, 24, 67.
And?
The first player to get five numbers in a row yells bingo.
Only this one person in the crowd yells bingo.
Yes. The other 200 yell, oh, nerds.
Oh, nerds?
Or a reasonable facsimile.
Well, are you reforming bingo, Mr. White?
We're stamping it out completely.
You are?
All gambling in Jersey has got to go.
Well, are you cracking down on some other gambling game?
Yes, I'm investigating this new numbers racket.
What the numbers racket?
Letters are coming through the mail from Washington. Young boys are getting cards with numbers on them. It has all the earmarks of a lottery.
A lottery, you dope? Those are draft numbers.
Drafto or bingo in Jersey, it's got to go.
If it's got to go... thank you. Trumbull, what? And now, this gentleman wearing the horse blanket with the belt in the back. Your name, sir?
Bolivar Rowdy.
Bolivar Rowdy. And what is your story, Mr. Rowdy?
Well, I was running a movie theater. I'm playing single features, double features, triple features, Mickey Mice.
And how was business?
I was losing me shirt.
What did you do?
I write to Hollywood. They send a guy on to hypo me business.
Oh, and his solution?
Well, he says I got everything going on inside the theater. It's a mistake.
A mistake?
Yeah, he says I ain't got nothing going on in the lobby.
Oh, a movie theater. You have to... Well, did you get some attractions for your lobby?
Brother, I got attractions all over the joint. Outside, I got singing pickets.
Singing pickets,
yeah.
Outside.
In the ticket booth is a magician. Inside the lobby, I got 16 acrobats and 40 pinball machines.
Yeah.
I got a mind reader outside the ladies' lounge.
Uh-huh.
Three donkey rides up and down the aisles for kids. And under each seat, there's a 7-course dinner.
Well, did this boom business?
Nah, I'm still losing me shirt.
And then?
Bingo. In comes bingo. It's sweeping the country.
Oh, and you?
Well, I threw them bums and pinball machines out of me theater and put in bingo. I'm cleaning up.
Business was good, hey?
I'm jamming them in. Weekends, I gotta put in vaudeville to chase people.
And now that bingo is illegal...
Again, I'm playing single features, double features, triple features, Mickey Mice.
And,
I'm right back losing me shirt.
Well, that explains that horse blanket with the belt in the back. And thank you, Bolivar Rowdy. And now this lady in the seersucker ensemble...
I'm Mrs. Jonquil Bibb.
Well, are you going to miss bingo, Mrs. Bibb?
Giving up bingo only means one thing to me.
And what is that?
My husband is getting his pot roast well done.
Well, what has your husband's pot roast got to do...
For 10 years, his pot roast ain't been well done.
Why?
Bingo.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't sense the connection.
Well, I live in Nutley, see?
Yeah?
Every morning, I'm through with the housework early.
Uh-huh.
I stall around listening to them radio serials. Hyman Dutta White.
Yeah.
The Silverberg. Life Can Be Ordinary.
Uh-huh.
Well, at 1 o'clock, I grab the Elizabeth bus. I know a spot there.
Oh, do you? Bingo spot.
Yeah. And all afternoon, I horse around playing bingo.
All afternoon?
Till 4 o'clock. Then I grab the Nutley bus, and at 5 o'clock, I'm back home putting on the pot roast.
Uh-huh.
At 6 o'clock, my husband's home. He's pouting. The pot roast ain't well done.
And this has been going on 10 years?
Thanks to bingo.
Well, now that bingo has been stopped in Elizabeth, things are different, huh?
Yeah, I'm playing in Belleville. I'm getting home an hour sooner.
Fine.
And I'm putting on the pot roast an hour earlier.
So?
So it's like I say, giving up bingo only means one thing to me.
Namely?
My husband is getting his pot roast how he likes it.
Well done.
Oh, thanks. You wasn't so bad yourself.
I bet you say that to all the MCs.
No, I ain't kidding. What are you doing after the show, big boy?
Well,
I got a mess of pot roast left over. How about you and me killing it?
Take your beef to the complaint department, and thank you, Mrs. Johnson. This gentleman with the corduroy knickers and the patent leather wedgies. Your name is...
Darby Timmons.
Darby Timmons.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about bingo?
The abolition of bingo should be done away with.
Well, why, Darby?
I ain't seen me wife for 6 months.
You mean?
Bingo.
Your wife plays?
It's the same routine every week. Every night I come home, there's a note laying in a frying pan. There's just one word on it.
And the word is?
Bingo.
Bingo.
Every night she's out at different clubs playing. Monday night it's the Daughters of Barbara Frietchie. Tuesday it's Sisters of Hope Circle.
Uh-huh.
Wednesday it's some new club. Girls Who Formerly Knew Rudy.
You mean, actually, that every night...
Every night it's the same. The same note, the same frying pan.
The same one word?
Bingo.
Why don't you do something about it?
I am. I'm taking action tonight. Tonight, I'm leaving a note in the frying pan.
Well, bully for you.
It's only going to say just one word.
Bingo?
Reno.
If bingo is legally banished throughout the state of New Jersey, bingo easies may spring up. Bingo games played sub rosa may sound something like this.
7 in the first row, 68 fifth row, 23 third row, 41 in... Shh! Who's that going?
It's me.
What is it, lady?
Bingo.
And now from bingo, we turn to singo. Kenny Baker, in fine vocal fettle, as usual, appears ready, willing, and able. And tonight, Kenny's first song is Georgia on My Mind.
Melody, bring memory. That linger in my heart, make me think of Georgia. Why did we ever part? Some sweet day when blossoms fall and all the world's a song, I'll go back to Georgia. Cause that's where I belong. Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia, of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly, still in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back. Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Other arms reach out to me. smile tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams I see the road leads back to you. Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia.
Georgia on his mind.
Pardon me, Fred.
Yes, Larry Elliott.
I'd like to give a birthday greeting to some friends of ours.
Oh, you would? Well, I don't.
Thank you, Fred.
Well,
Texaco dealers from coast to coast wish a happy birthday to John, Bill, Mary, Joe, Pete, Mildred, Barbara, Jane, Charlie, Ted.
Wait a minute, Larry. You sound like Uncle Don gone mad there. How many people are you wishing a happy birthday anyway?
53,000, Fred.
53,000, all our friends?
They can be. Because they're the 53,000 young American men and women who this week and every week reach driving age. Yes, a happy birthday to them all. And may they all soon enjoy the thrill of getting behind the wheel of a car for the first time. And you, ladies and gentlemen, no matter how long you've been driving, you'll recapture that first thrill behind the wheel of your car with Sky Chief, Texaco's different premium gasoline. Sky Chief will delight you with surging, hill-leveling power when open country invites, yet throttle down to an effortless glide in traffic, and pick up again with an eager, buoyant lift. And that kind of flexible power is why you shift gears less often when Sky Chief is in the tank. Why you relax with such confidence at the wheel. Try Sky Chief, your Texaco dealer's premium gasoline for those who want the best.
Maestro Goodman and his 24 exemptions. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we've just received a special flash on the bus strike. Mayor LaGuardia says that if the bus strike isn't settled by tomorrow, he'll put the 6th Avenue L back up. And he'll he'll do it, too. He's got the hat and the blowtorch. Hello. Hello, Portland.
Hello.
Well, of all...
Greetings, girls of the Minnehaha Troop. Tonight, I speak to you
Wait a minute. What is this?
I'm addressing the campfire girls.
What campfire girls?
The Minnehaha Troop is sitting around the campfire in Prospect Park with a portable radio.
Oh, well, look, Portland, we haven't time to... after all...
But I've got to make my speech before the campfire goes out.
Why?
Without a campfire? Well, there's just a bunch of girls.
And without a sponsor? Well, we're just a bunch of people. I think we'll just forego your forensic flight for the evening.
Oh, why can't I make a speech? Kenny made one last week.
Speech? Kenny didn't even get started. What did Kenny say? Friends, Romans, and Texaco dealers?
Water! Water! I must have water!
Get that guy back here! Beamish!
Yes, sir?
Who told you to run in here, ad libitum, and page H2O?
Well, you said Texaco dealers. That's my cue.
That was your cue last week.
I know. This week I'm thirsty. Water! Water!
What a program. I'm sorry I ever let Kenny make that speech.
But Kenny got a swell job out of it.
A job?
Yes. Kenny's working for the Elite Auction Company.
As an auctioneer?
No. Kenny is doing public speaking in the crowd.
Public? What public speaking?
When somebody bids, Kenny bids higher.
Well, he's a tenor. Naturally, he bids higher than other people. But look, Portman, Kenny isn't a public speaker in that auction dump. He's nothing but a shill.
What's a shill?
A shill, as in she'll be coming round the mountain when she comes. A shill is a man who works with the auctioneer incognito. A shill bids other people up, you see, so they pay more than the article is worth.
Oh.
And I'm certainly surprised that Kenny... stooping to such infamous skullduggery.
But Kenny thinks he was hired because of the speaking voice.
He was hired because he looks like a simpleton. That's why he was hired.
Who bid? Sold any man.
All right, Kenny. We know about your new racket.
It's not a racket, F.A. It's a swell job.
Did you have a good day today, Kenny?
Terrific. Thanks to me, the company made its biggest sale of the day.
Well, how did you swing it?
Well, all afternoon it was dull. Nothing much happened. Then the policeman went away and things picked up.
Naturally.
The auctioneer put up a genuine Chinese music box. It was a beauty.
And what happened, Kenny?
A wealthy gentleman and Mr. Huxley bid 25 cents.
And then?
The auctioneer tipped me a wink. Like a flash, I bid 50 cents.
Yeah.
Huxley bids a dollar. I bid $2.
Yes.
Huxley bids five. I yell 10. Huxley bids 11. I bid 12. Huxley bids 13. Yeah. I bid 14.
Go on.
That's all, brother. Mr. Huxley stopped bidding.
And you?
I won. The auctioneer sold it to me for $14.
You won? You mean you got stuck?
Stuck? Why, it was a bargain, F.A.
Oh, I give up. There's nothing I can do.
Why didn't you let Mr. Huxley have it when he said $13, Kenny?
He didn't want it, Porty. Mr. Huxley was a shill, too. We just hadn't been introduced.
Kenny, you have been hornswoggled. Don't you know that for $14 you now own a Chinese music box that's probably worth about two bits?
Oh, don't worry, F.A. I'll get my money back.
How, Kenny?
I've got the music box here. I'll auction it off right now.
Over my dead body.
But I got to get my $14 back, F.A.
Why?
I've got to go back to shilling tomorrow. I've got to have money. Suppose I outbid somebody again.
Kenny, you have been trimmed more times than the wick in a lighthouse lamp. Now, just start your music box going and join it on the way out.
But, F.A.,
Look, if we want Chinese music here, we can get it from Mr. Goodman. And I'm not sure we haven't been getting it all along.
Oh, let Kenny start bet is auction, Mr. Allen. I'll bet.
Look, you're not. There are some limitations. You're not turning this program into an auction. Now, look, Kenny, I'll give you a dollar for that Chinese music box, and we'll just get on with the show.
Oh, gee, that's swell of you, Mr. Allen.
All right. Here's your dollar.
I got a dollar. Who make it two? Who make it two?
$2.
Quiet, Portland. Look, Kenny, I'll make it $3.
I got $3. Who make it four? $4. Who make it two? I hear $4? Mr. Goodman, do I hear four?
Somebody is calling Goodman.
Do I hear $4? Do I hear $4?
It could be money talk.
I've got $3.
If you're taking inventory, I, Goodman, have 40 cents.
But Mr. Goodman, remember?
Aha! The essence of rodents tinctures the breeze. What is this hugger-mugger, Kenny? Is Mr. Goodman here supposed to be your shill?
Why, F.A.
Shill?
Aha!
Suddenly Goodman is remembering.
Okay, I've got $3. Are you done?
$500.
$500. Thank you, Mr. Goodman.
You're welcome. $600.
Thank you.
You're welcome. $700.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute, Maestro. What are you doing?
Goodman is bidding against Goodman. I'll give him a run for his money, that rat.
Let's go, folks. $700 has been bid. $700 for this genuine Chinese music box. 701.
Okay, Mr. Allen, it's your turn.
I said $3, and that's my limit.
700 twice.
It won't help, Kenny.
700 three times. 700 four times. 700 five times. Do I hear $4, Mr. Allen?
No. I said $3. You can take it or abandon it. Now, let's get on with the program.
But Mr. Goodman bid $700.
If you catch the Goodman who bid $700 for a Chinese music box, from me to him, say, you should live so long.
Kenny, look, fold up your portable shill and...
I'll answer it. Hello? The Elite Auction Company? Yes, I still got it. Okay, I'll be right down.
What was it, Kenny?
Where's that music box? I've got to feed it right down to the auction company.
Gosh, maybe they found out it's valuable.
That's right. Maybe they want to buy it back.
Now, just a minute, Kenny. If that fly-by-night auction company really wants that music box back, there's something in the wind.
Look at this writing on the box, Mr. Allen.
What does it say?
Ming Dynasty, 1200 A.D.
Ming Dynasty, 1200
A.D.? Guys, it's 700 years old. I'll never get my money back for this piece of junk.
Kenny, I've been thinking, lad. After all, you and I are old buddies. Now, I hate to see an old buddy get stuck. I tell you what I'm going to do, old buddy. You give me that old junky music box, and I'll give you back your $14.
Gosh, F.A., you're a true blue buddy. Here.
And here, old buddy, is your $14.
Mr. Allen, are you sure you're not cheating, Kenny?
Frankly, Portland, I am.
Mr. Allen!
Kenny, I took advantage of you. Now, I may make $100,000 out of this deal, but that's beside the point. I only did it to teach you a lesson. Now, always let this remind you, Kenny. Let it serve to remind you. Never trust anyone, even an old buddy.
I'll remember that, F.A., buddy.
Can we play your music box, Mr. Allen?
Well, all right, but be very careful of it.
I'll wind it up.
Now, easy, Kenny. That's 700 years old. It must be very delicate.
There, it's all set.
Now, turn that little switch, Kenny.
Okay. Quiet, everybody. We'll probably hear a strange oriental melody that has been lost to civilization for centuries. Here goes.
Civilization for centuries. That's Genie with the light brown transformation. I heard it 40 times yesterday, twice with dyed hair, I heard.
Well, at least it's a new arrangement.
Quiet. Ming Dynasty, 1200 A.D., a priceless antique.
Well, I didn't say it was.
Oh, no? What was that important phone call you got a few minutes ago, Kenny?
It was from the Elite Auction Company.
I know that, but what did the man say?
He said to hurry down.
Why?
For $2 more, he'll give me one that plays Frenzy.
Kenny, you took advantage of an old buddy.
I only did it to teach you a lesson, F.A. Always let this remind you, F.A., never trust anyone, even an old buddy.
All right, old buddy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, while I hide my watch before some little boy on his way home from school talks me out of it, the Martin sing Kikonga. All right, maestro, 1, 2.
I've got 2. Who made it 3? Who made it 3?
Play, maestro, please. Play.
With a 1, 2, 3 kick, here we go. Make your heart go tick, tick, not the more. Make your heart beat quick, quick, solid, Joe. Not kick, conga. Make your heart go tick, tick. When she gives out with a 1, 2, 3 kick.
Not kick, conga.
Oh, not kick, conga.
Kick, 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 conga. Kick, conga, kick. Locket conga, deep, 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 shake the shoulder with abandon, Nita.
Locket conga,
oh, locket conga.
Kick, 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 conga, kick, conga, kick. When you first see her dancing, you'll know you've never seen a lady more than dancing. From the Rockies to the Argentine. Lock it, conga, make her heart beat quick, quick. When she gives out with a 1, 2, 3 kick.
Lock it, conga, oh, lock it, conga.
Kick, 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 conga. Oh, 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 conga. Happy conga, come and do that. Happy conga. So she's never left Manhattan. She can conga like a Latin. On and on, that happy conga.
On and on.
Make her heart go tick, tick.
Lift your feet.
With a 1, 2, 3 tick.
Don't retreat.
Make her heart beat tick.
Give that beat.
They're opening an engagement at the Key Theater in Boston tomorrow. Say, give my regards to Mayor Tobin, Martins, as you pass by the City Hall going down School Street there. Say, Jimmy, yes. What's wrong with Kenny?
I don't know.
Well, look at him. He's standing there staring into space.
Say, maybe he's in love or something.
Did I hear my name mentioned?
Yes, and I'm surprised you did, Kenneth, the way you're standing there in a coma. What's the matter? Have you got trance in your glands?
Oh, I'm just dreaming of life in the South Seas.
The South Seas?
Yeah. Last night I read a book, Life in Pogo Pogo, or Just a Sarong at Twilight.
Yeah?
Tonight I keep seeing myself under a palm tree, strumming a ukulele, dancing a hula with Dorothy L'Amour.
Yeah?
Baker the Beachcomber, simple child of nature.
Well, look, child. Before you take off for the South Seas, let me tell you that life down there isn't all that it's cracked up to be. Coconuts keep falling off those palm trees and conking you on the head. Well, it could be vice versa. I mean, you can climb a tree and hit a coconut with your head. I mean, it's optional, but I was just paying a little courtesy, a little respect to gravity here, and you men laugh at me. Coconuts keep falling off those palm trees and conking you on the head. People who give you a hot foot are always setting your grass skirt on fire down there.
Why, yes, and besides, you never get a chance to relax. You've always got to keep watching for smoke.
For smoke? Why?
Why, because those South Sea islands have volcanoes. And people who live near a volcano always have to keep a lookout for smoke. Or it may be a sign that trouble's brewing. And smoke puffing from the exhaust of a car might mean trouble, too. It can be a sign that engine wear has reached a point where only a repair job will help. So decide not to wait until your car smokes. By using insulated Havilland motor oil, you can help prevent needless engine wear indicated by a smoky exhaust. Wear due to heat, wear due to cold, and wear due to oil impurities. For insulated Havilland has the strength of body to stand up under the high temperatures of modern engines, where ordinary oils may break down and invite serious wear. Insulated Havilland is free-flowing, too. Protects against the wear of cold starts. Havilland is also distilled, to remove carbon-forming impurities. So look out for smoke and trouble. Stop at your Texaco dealer and change to insulated Havoline. Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. WABC, New York.
Texaco Roundtable convenes for another session, ladies and gentlemen. All of the other radio roundtables discuss the weighty issues of the hour. The Texaco Forum dedicates itself to trivia. Three members of our studio audience have been invited to sit in tonight for an unrehearsed discussion on anything. I won't promise that this meeting will prove spontaneous, but 10 will get you 20 that it is entirely unrehearsed. Now, the meeting is formally opened, and our first guest, Portland, is...
Lieutenant Condren of the United States Air Corps.
Good evening, Lieutenant.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask where you're stationed?
Mitchell Field, Mr. Allen.
Mitchell Field?
That's
Mitchell
right.
Field is the Army training field for Army pilots, isn't it?
Well, not exactly, Mr. Allen.
Wrong again, huh?
Mitchell Field is the pursuit unit for New York area. In other words, pilots are trained at various training centers. And after graduation, I sent to Mitchell Field.
Mitchell Field. How many men? You must be pretty busy over there these days. How many men have you over there training?
Well, we have about 4,000 enlisted men.
4,000.
And about 380 officers, most of whom are pilots.
Oh, I see. Well, how many... what is the procedure in the training of a pilot? I mean, how long a course is required and what are the qualifications? And...
That's a very good point, Mr. Allen. I'm glad you asked me that question.
Well,
the Army...
You looked as though you wanted me to ask you that question, so I...
Right now, the Army's in the process of trying to train 12,000 pilots in a year.
12,000 in a single year?
In a
huh?
single year, that's correct. Now, the qualifications are that a man must be not less than 20 years of age
uh-huh.
and not more than 27.
Uh-huh.
He must have had 2 years of college or its equivalent
uh-huh.
by taking an examination, a mental examination. Upon completing the mental examination, or having had the 2 years of college,
uh-huh.
he is allowed to take the physical examination, and upon passing that, is sent to one of 27 primary schools.
And how long does he stay there?
He stays at a primary school for 10 weeks, that entire course being 30 weeks.
Uh-huh.
After finishing the 10 weeks at primary school, he goes to advanced, and then to, rather to primary and advanced. 30 weeks in all, and he's...
30 weeks, and then at the end of that time, I suppose he's able to fly a Greyhound bus. I mean, after he's been through that ritual.
Anything that has wings. Right?
Well, thank you. I'll try you out with my canary sometime. It's not getting off the ground the way it used to. Since we sold the cage. But thank you a lot, Lieutenant. And now, Portland.
Miss Mary Margaret McBride of Paris.
Mary McMartin. Mary Margaret McBride. You're from Paris, Miss McBride?
Missouri.
Paris, Missouri. I thought your accent was missing there.
No, well, that is, all right.
When was the last time you saw Paris?
Missouri?
Well, I mean, you brought it up.
Oh, about 6 months ago.
Well, town must have been sort of empty when you left there, wasn't it?
Well, there were a couple of other people.
A couple of people hanging around. Well, what is your profession, Miss McBride, may I ask?
I talk over the radio.
You talk over the radio?
Yes, sir.
And here in New York City?
Yes, sir.
Well, now I'm even with you. You talked about our program on your program 2 weeks ago. So tonight we're going to talk about your program on my program. Now, first, have you got a sponsor?
Yes, sir.
You have a sponsor?
A very good sponsor.
Who is your sponsor?
Florida.
The
state of Florida.
The state of Florida. Well,
yes,
you're
sir.
Fortunate. You know, most comedians, Mr. Benny especially, is sponsored by the state of Coma, which... most of the time. But your work to me is very interesting, Miss McBride, because you go on the air every day, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, it takes us all week to get this show together to finally get on the air with it. Now, how do you find enough things to be able to go on the air every afternoon? How do you do that?
Well, I just talk about anything that interests me.
Oh, you don't prepare? But...
Well, yeah. Oh, you bet I work hard going out and looking at the things.
Looking for things for material, huh?
But the reason I've been hanging around here so much lately is because I've decided I'd rather be a comedian.
You'd rather be a comedian? Now, Miss McBride, don't tell me that you ultimately want to get to look like me.
I don't even mind that if I can be as funny as you are.
Well, thanks a lot. That's a matter of opinion, of course. Well, thank you, Miss McBride. Now tune in tomorrow to hear you get even with us. And now, Portland?
Mr. Barney Lazar from Corona, Long Island.
Mr. Lazar, may I ask you, do you work here in New York? Are you in business here in New York?
I work in New York, Mr. Allen.
May I ask you where?
At Radio City, Rockefeller Center.
You do? Really? What do you do there?
I'm one of the elevator mechanics, or technicians, as they call it.
An elevator technician?
That's right, Mr.
Well,
Allen.
Radio City is full of vice presidents. Do you have an executive title that goes with your job?
Why, no, just plain ordinary elevator mechanic.
You're not the vice president in charge of Wild Otis, are you?
No, not at all.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, that apparently brings us to our question. Now, tonight the roundtable considers the average man's approach to his daily newspaper. In this high-pressure age, most newspapers conduct advertising campaigns to call the reader's attention to feature writers, Broadway columnists, and cartoon strips. The papers rarely, if ever, publicize their editorial policies or their methods of news presentation. Now, as newspaper readers, we ask our roundtable guests this question. Do you think the average man buys the paper he reads because of its presentation of the news and editorial policies, or does he buy his paper because of a special feature it contains? Now, Lieutenant, how do you feel about that? What do you think influences a person who takes the daily paper?
Well, from what I can see in the...
Would you say
in the subways in the morning, whenever I come to town on business, I'd say most people buy them for the comics.
For the comic supplement. Well, you may have something there. What influences you when you buy your paper? Do you buy it for the sports section or the editorial policy of the paper or the way it presents its news or what?
Well, frankly, I live from day to day for Dick Tracy.
Just for Dick Tracy. Well, I can imagine you living with high blood pressure and in eternal suspense, but I guess in your business, Lieutenant, you don't mind that. I imagine Dick Tracy's a letdown after you've been working around the field all day.
Well,
Miss McBride, how do you feel about it? What appeals to you most in a paper?
Well, I think most people buy it for news, but... If you'd asked me this question a few years ago, I'd have said I bought a certain paper just to see if my story had got in.
Oh, you were writing for the newspaper, huh?
And that's what newspaper people do.
Well, that's pretty selfish. Of course, on most papers, if all the people who write for the papers bought the paper, they wouldn't have any trouble about circulation. Well, thank you, Miss McBride. I'm a little pressed for time here. The tailor brought it back too tight. Mr. Lazar, how do you feel about your paper? Why do you buy your paper?
Well, I like to buy the news, Mr. Allen, because I like to read the columnists in the news.
Oh, you're one of those gossip men, huh?
I don't read the Mirror because I don't...
Well,
like...
we're not allowed to... of course, when you mention the Mirror, you bring up reflections, and... The table seems to have taken up too long and it's 100% undecided. Now, I don't feel that this little discussion tonight will cause the average newspaper reader to change his choice of paper. Tomorrow, as usual, scholars and thinkers will continue to buy their favorite newspapers to wade through the editorial dissertations. People who read over other people's shoulders will take pot luck as usual, but John Doe and Lieutenant Condren will buy their papers to see what Dick Tracy is up to. Thanks a lot for your kind cooperation. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenny sings his next number to the members of our little group as they leave the round table, and Kenny's ditty is You Walk By.
You walk by and shine as a breeze. You walk by and dim the sunlight's gleam. You speak words and shame the birds that sing. Your smile is softer than the touch of spring. You walk by and children pause at play. You walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here and not above when you walk by, my love. Magicians can make things disappear or pull a rabbit out of a hat. But your loveliness, my dear, does greater things than that. You walk by and children pause at play. You walk by, December seems like May. Heaven is right here. I'm not a fool when you walk by my love.
Thank you, Kenny. That was very nice.
This is an insult. I will not stand for it. I'm going to quit.
Here. What's going... Who is that? Who's quitting?
I'm quitting.
Well, now, wait a minute. You can't quit. Why, you're one of my leading Texaco workshop players, son, and our sketch goes on in just a minute.
That's just why I'm quitting. Do you realize that sketch deals with the income tax? I refuse to play in it.
Why?
I'm mad at the income tax.
Why?
Last year, I claimed a deduction for wear and tear in my tonsils from reading radio scripts. They disallowed it. It's a dud.
Yes,
I claim a deduction for wear and tear in my shoes from tramping from studio to studio. They disallowed it. It's a dud.
Yes, but...
I claim a deduction for all...
Now, look, brother. I don't care what you claim. You work tonight according to contract, or you'll find yourself faced with a bigger suit than that one you've got on there.
Oh, but, Mr. Allen, I...
Now, get over to that microphone and be prepared to deliver. The sketch goes on as soon as we hear from Mr. Wallington here on the subject of claims and duds.
Yes, just as that actor's claims don't mean a thing and he's got to deliver, there's one time of the year when claims don't mean a thing and gasoline must really deliver. And that's in cold winter weather. So it really means something to learn that again this winter, motorists by the thousands have switched to Texaco Fire Chief because the duds, those useless, worthless elements, are out of Fire Chief. They found Fire Chief quickly responsive to any and every driving demand. And naturally, they're going to want that same lively performance in their cars all year round. Why not put Fire Chief to the test in your car? Next time, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief. It's all action, not a dud in a tank full.
At this time each year, millions of Americans start groaning in anticipation of that annual pain in the pocketbook, the income tax. With March 15th only 3 days away, working men and women everywhere are frantically filling out their tax blanks and wondering if a fiduciary is a man who fiduces. Well, who started the income tax? Tonight, this mystery is explained. The Texaco Workshop Players dramatize the life of the first income tax collector. This little cameo is called Philander Blank, My Story. Overture, Maestro. Philander Blank was born on March 15, 1894, in the great state of Texas, in the little town of Annual. Philander was so tiny as a baby, the stork wouldn't even bother with him. Little Philander was brought by a sparrow. At first, his parents made an incubator out of an old percolator top. But as Philander grew, he was taken out and kept in a cigar box under the stove. One night, his father came home from work.
Evening, Ma. How's little Philander?
He's powerful puny, Paul. Cat dragged him out from under the stove twice today.
Never seen a kid so small and skinny. Where is he?
Right here, Paul.
Oh, cootie, cootie, cool, Philander. Ain't enough meat on him to tempt a Pekingese. Certainly beats me. All my family, the Blanks, was big people. And here I got a son who ain't no bigger than a termite's wishbone.
Maybe we've been reading too many of them Digest magazines, Paul.
Well, maybe. But Philander's a Blank. He ain't disgracing us Blanks. He's got to build up.
But how?
Well, stuff him with puffed rice and puffed bran.
To swell, Philander, you mean?
Yep. This is one Blank we gotta fill out.
This is one blank we gotta fill out. Ominous words that were to echo down through the years. But Philander thrived on his puff diet and grew stronger each day. The baby's strength was the talk of the little town of Annual in Texas. When Philander was 3 years old, his mother wrote a letter to old Granny Blank. And in the letter she said,
"Little Philander keeps getting stronger. Yesterday the little fella picked himself up by the seat of the diaper and held himself out to arm's length."
At the age of 12, he was so strong, the village blacksmith complained to Philander's father. The smithy said,
"Blank, I don't mind your son pulling the shoes off of horses I've just shod to pitch quoits. But when he pitches horseshoes with the horses still on them, the boy's gone too far."
And so it went. Philander seemed to grow stronger and stronger as he grew older. When he was 16, Philander went to the state fair alone that year. He entered one tent just as the milking contest ended. The announcer was shouting,
"Folks, the $100 prize entitled a state milking champion goes to Clement Blount of Beaumont." Say something, Clement.
"Oh, shucks, t'weren't nothing. The cow had and I took."
"You got 41 quarts out of one cow, Clement. That ain't Pepsi-Cola."
"Well, it just shows what a feller can do with a little pull."
At this moment, the crowd was dumbfounded when little Philander put down his popcorn ball and shouted,
"I can get more milk out of that cow."
"Who said that?"
"I, Philander Blank, said that. I can coax more milk out of that cow you just milked."
"My $100 prize says you can't. I milked her so dry, the last pint was dust."
"I'll settle that dust. Here, Bessie. Steady, girl, steady.
You won't get enough milk to discolor a demitasse.
Watch this. Come on, Bessie."
"Well, I'll be..."
"I ain't started yet. Stand back before the spray hits you."
"Holy hollyhock!"
"And just to show off, Clement. Come on, Bessie. Bump, diddly-um-bump." "How's that, Clement?"
"Well, I'll be took and did for. How'd you do it, son?"
"Well, cows is like people, Rube. If you want to get a little more, all you got to do is squeeze them."
"Squeeze them" expressed Philander's philosophy, and "squeeze them" was to be his slogan in later years. Adolescence turned Philander over to manhood. He fell in love with a butter-cheeked young thing about town. But every time Philander hugged his girl, he broke her ribs. And finally, in self-defense, she broke the engagement. Heartbroken, Philander left the little town of Annual in Texas and hitchhiked to New York City, where he soon became a mendicant on the Bowery. One day, he saw an ad in a medical journal. He applied at the clinic.
"Dr. Auerbach?"
"Yes, beaten one."
"I seen your ad. Man wanted to give blood transfusion, and here I am."
"Why, you're anemic, man. You haven't any blood to spare."
"But I can guarantee a transfusion, Doc. I got something in this bag."
"Well, it's an emergency. I'll have to take a chance. Come along, right in here."
"Oh, yeah, Doc."
"Is the patient prepared for transfusion, nurse?"
"Yes, Dr. Auerbach."
"Oh.
Patient looks bad. We must hurry. Just what is it you're going to do with that paper bag, Bob?"
"I'll leave it to me, Doc. Just stick the needle through the paper. I'll squeeze the bag."
"All right. Ready?"
"Okay, Doc."
"We're ready for the transfusion. Squeeze, man."
"Okay. Oh.
The patient's coming too, Doctor."
"Where am I? Yes.
Yes, where's my hat? Where's my coat? Well, goodbye, all."
"What a recovery."
"Amazing. This transfusion will revolutionize medical science."
"I told you, Doc."
"What have you got in that bag?"
"A turnip."
"You can get blood out of a turnip?"
"Yep."
"Gad, man, you're a vegetable Dr. Kildare."
Philander's star twinkled in the dark sky of phlebotomy for but a brief moment. PM wrote that the man who had the turnip transfusion had to stop and lie down every time he saw a boiled dinner. So Philander gave up his work, ate his turnip, and after a mild attack of indigestion, he became a bum again. A year later, he was found panhandling on the streets of Washington, D.C. Philander, still strong, and by now skilled in the art of wheedling, stopped his first prospects.
"Buddy."
"What is it, Flotsam?"
Can you give me a nickel for a cup of coffee?"
"I can't give you a nickel. I will lease you or lend you a nickel."
Thanks.
"Precious, what is that noise?"
"It's the Indian on this nickel."
"What?"
"I can squeeze a nickel till the Indian hollers. Look."
Gad, man, the country can use a man like you. I can get you a job.
Yeah? Who are you?
I, sir, am Bascom T. Snipe, treasurer of these United States. Something tells me you can squeeze something out of anything.
Yeah. As a boy, I could squeeze a cow dry.
Good.
I could get blood out of a turnip.
Blood out of a turnip?
Yeah.
Squeeze a cow dry?
Yeah.
Then you are the man America needs.
What do I have to do?
Congress is passing a new tax, an income tax.
Yeah.
You will be the country's first income tax collector. You will squeeze money out of people.
You mean I'll be famous?
Yes, your birthday will long be remembered in our land.
It's March 15th.
Good. In your honor, the income tax will be collected on that day.
Will my name go down in history?
Yes. What is your full name?
Philander Blank. I was born in Annual, Texas.
Excellent. That will be America's slogan.
What?
Phil Blank, Annual, Texas, March 15th.
And this is how, many years ago, Philander Blank became the first income tax collector, kiddies. And as we toil over our forms and sweat over our figures, let us give thanks, for without our taxes, this great country could not enable us to live the American way. For this, then, let us salute our Uncle Sam and Philander Blank.
The next few moments are devoted to the entire petroleum industry by the Texas Company. Now that spring is just a few days away, it is hard for those of this generation to believe that once when winter closed in, travel on most of our highways and byways came practically to a standstill, and that travel at night to most people was unthinkable. Today, you can get into your car and travel clear across the country in any direction without more than a second's thought to the weather, and with no worry about obtaining gasoline, motor oil, and service. For service stations, those outposts of the petroleum industry comprise a great network that serves you everywhere, in every season, day or night.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. We'll be looking for you next Wednesday. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast, and inviting you to drive in at any time. Remember, you're welcome.
Columbia Broadcasting System.